Last week we started a very, very upsetting, disturbing conversation, which was about the plight of a mamzer. And we spoke about a situation that is unfolding and what we should do to try to help this young man who has a very serious shaila of mamzerus. I don't know if everybody was here last week or not, but that's basically what we spoke about. And everybody said we should continue the conversation today. So I'm happy to report that the chasana took place last night. B'shah tova matzlachas. As of Friday afternoon, there still was no heter. As of Sunday night, there still was no heter. So this all happened on Monday, the day before the wedding. And Baruch Hashem, it's really a tremendous chus that the great gedolim of our generation had the shoulders to be able to be mekel. Rav Asher Weiss did make a comment to me on Friday when we spoke at the whole issue once again, and he thought that there were a number of tzirufim lahakel in this case, and he said, if I end up going to Gehenim for this, I do not want to be in Gehenim alone. So he said, I need someone to talk and learning with. So the only way I'm willing to do this is if Rav Schechter is going to sign along with me, so then at least we can learn together. My father did not agree. My father did not feel that there were grounds to be mekel here, which I didn't feel was important to share with the Chassan and Kala. They don't need to know who agreed, who didn't agree. Rav Shlomo Amar in Eretz Yisrael also felt very strongly that he did not think there was room to be mekel, but there were other very chashuv dayanim. The Yad Beis Din in Tel Aviv said that this is something that he was totally comfortable with. He signed off on the bottom as well. Other great great poskim who felt very comfortable with this, and that's what we went with. And this couple got married. Now, if you hear that I was at a wedding last night, don't think that that's the wedding that it was. I was not in attendance for this wedding. I saw a lot of people from our community at a wedding last night, and they all said, oh, this was the wedding. I said, no, this had nothing to do with the wedding I was at last night. Everybody heard that I was dealing with the Mamzeira Shaila, but I was not invited to the Mamzeira Shaila wedding. I had nothing to do with the couple in the first place. This was just a Shaila that we were working on. So last week we spoke about how devastating it is and how difficult it is when you have this kind of situation that presents itself, just to bring out the point a little bit further and to make us understand and appreciate how upsetting it is. And by the way, when Rav Asher Weiss, originally when I called him, he said, very hard to be mekel. Then when we went through some of the tzedim back and forth, on Friday when he called me back, we were on the phone for an hour, and he was talking through his entire thought process as to why he thinks we can formulate a heter here. And he did say to me that when framing these kinds of issues, you need to understand that the same way we would be machmir for dinei nefashos, and we go to the extreme to try to figure out how to save somebody's life. And not only that, the Gemara says when we have a case of dinei nefashos in front of us, where somebody actually may have done something wrong, we really try as hard as we can. We don't take people's lives lightly. We take it very seriously. And he said, any time there's a case of mamzerus, he feels it's the same kind of severity that it has to be dealt with. You're basically stamping a person and saying that for all generations subsequent, you will never be able to get married. You're never going to be able to move forward. You're always going to have the stain of mamzerus on you. In order to be able to do that, you have to be very, very convinced that this person is actually a mamzer. So this is something that is a very complex issue, as I said. Maybe we'll get into some of the parts of it as we go through the shiur this evening. If we don't finish everything, maybe we can talk some more next week. There's a lot to talk about here. My father actually felt that we shouldn't tell him. We shouldn't say anything. Now, what does that mean, don't say anything? Let's say I know that you're eating treif. So if I know that somebody's eating treif, do I just say, you know what, don't say anything? If it's a situation of pikuach nefashos and the person needs this to survive, that's a different story. But where there's plenty of food here, and I see you walking into a restaurant that I know is not kosher, don't I have an obligation to tell you? Don't I have an obligation to stop you? I always find it interesting on Central Avenue, so there are many, many restaurants up and down the avenue, and then there's one store called the Bagelry. Bagelry sounds very Jewish, but as far as I understand, it's not kosher. Is that correct? So I saw a couple going in this week who were visiting the neighborhood. I was on a walk with my wife. This couple was just visiting, and they went into the store assuming, why shouldn't they assume, that a bagel store on Central Avenue, where all the Jews go out and eat all the time, why would they assume that a store that sounds very Jewish is not Jewish? So it's a question. Do you get involved? Do you say, you know what, they don't know they're doing anything wrong and let me leave it? Of course not. We're supposed to inform people when they're doing something wrong. So how can you say here, you know, let's just not tell him, let's not tell the girl, let's not tell the boy, and let's let it go? What does that mean? We're just going to pretend it doesn't exist? So that's something we're going to have to get to. If we have enough time, I think it's worth exploring that piece of this also. Why would there even be a tzad? Why would there be a room to say that maybe we shouldn't tell him? Now, my father believes that. The only problem I have with my father's idea. Even if al-pi halacha would be an idea that is somewhat acceptable to do that, even if that would be the case, the problem here is we live in a world, we live in a society of transparency. We live in a world where everything gets found out, people are researching everything, and at some point, maybe not today, maybe not before the wedding, maybe not next week, but over the course of this person's life, this is going to be exposed. At some point, he's going to look into it, and it's very possible that he's going to find out that he has a problem. And what do we do then? So what do we do if he finds out 20 years into his marriage and he already has a whole family of children and now you're passing all the mamzerim? Back in Europe, back in Lita, when there was no way of verifying all these things and there was nobody alive and there was no database to keep all this information registered, that would be a different story. Maybe you can say that a person then don't say anything, which again, we have to talk about why that would even be a possibility, but maybe that was a realistic possibility. Today, I don't believe that that's a realistic possibility. I think we have to be concerned that maybe this is going to come to light, maybe not before the wedding, but later on. And my father agreed that maybe that's true. Maybe he doesn't appreciate it as much because he's not on social media and he's not on the internet and he's not seeing what's going on. But those of us who do go on Google and those of us who do frequent social media and see what's going on, we may have a little bit of a different perspective as to whether a person can really keep something like this private and whether really it won't come to light at some point later on in history. That's I think, a very big point of concern that has changed in our generation from perhaps or potentially a generation ago. So just to bring the severity to our attention a little bit more, in the 17th century, passed away in 1702, Rabbi Yair Bachrach was the author of the very famous Tshuva Sefer called Chavos Yair. Chavos Yair is one of the Tshuva Svarim that is quoted fairly often in the Sifrei HaHalacha, and the Chavos Yair got the following shaila. There was a woman who did something wrong. She went and she had an affair while she was married, and she became pregnant. And now the problem is she's pregnant with a mamzer. And she came and asked the shaila. I'm being very honest, she says. I did something wrong. I shouldn't have done it. I'll do tshuva for that. But the problem is, now I have a child who's going to be born who's going to suffer the consequence, the price of what I've done wrong. And she came and asked the shaila to the Chavos Yair. I don't know if it was to him or it ended up getting to him. The shaila was, am I allowed to do an abortion in order that this mamzer shouldn't be born? I feel bad for the kid. Why is it fair that I'm going to ruin someone else's life because of something that I personally have done wrong? That was the shaila. And the Chavos Yair discusses the whole sugya of abortion in general, which is a big discussion in the Rishonim and in the Poskim. How do we look at the story of abortion? At what point is an abortion acceptable? When is it permissible? When do we say maybe it's Ritzicha, maybe not? Anyway, he gets into all of that, and then he says, but now let's get to the issue at hand here. Whatever you say, Ritzicha is a very serious issue. I'm sorry. Hapalas Uber, doing an abortion, is a very, very serious matter. We don't just let it happen without looking into it and without being very careful who we would allow such a thing for. So here says the Chavos Yair, are there grounds to say that because this mamzer or mamzeres's life is about to be destroyed if they'll be born, is there a ground to say that maybe we should allow her to do an abortion in order to save the child from a life of misery? That's the question. Amazing. Says the Chavos Yair, Isha ki sista tachas isha, we have a woman in our situation who did something wrong while she's married, v'teiz panel l'sheilas chacham kazeh. And now she has no shame to come to the rabbi. Now, I would look at it the other way. I would say, she's so embarrassed and she's so humiliated. And, well, amazing that this woman, with all the busha and all the shame, still asked the shaila to the rabbi in order to save the child. Amazing. I don't know. I was very amazed by that. Chavos Yair is not so excited about it. And he says that the shaila is whether or not she's allowed to do an abortion. Davar badoyu v'lo haya v'lo nivra. He says, this is crazy. What, are we going to allow this woman just because she did something wrong? Sometimes when you do something wrong, you have to pay a price. Sometimes you have to suffer the consequence. Now the problem here is, she's not suffering the consequence. The child is going to suffer the consequence. So he writes here that he's not so excited about it. He says, "Kasher be'emes b'tshuvasi ala she'ela." He says, number one, let me just be very clear. Ein chiluk ben hayosamu uberes ishto hanesua ukshera shebenashim. Oh, mamzer me'eshes ish. It shouldn't make a difference whether a woman is pregnant with a child who's an isha k'sheira, a major tzadekes, or a woman is doing things wrong and is pregnant with a mamzer. That doesn't matter. If we say that doing an abortion is something that is wrong, then you're not allowed to do it. Why do we care who you are? It wouldn't be allowed. We would give no dispensation, he says. And after all, he says, don't you know, sha'arei lo niflesi mimcha, you all know, he says, t'din mamzer l'chol davar k'din Yisrael kasher. He says, so the child is going to be born. Okay, so the child is not allowed to get married. It's one aspect of his or her life. However, says the Chavos Yair, in terms of every other aspect of Jewish life, we would accept this person. And a mamzer is a card-carrying member of the Jewish people. And we would let them into shul, and they're part of the community. And then he goes further and he says, V'roy Elio's dayan ha-gadol, and we would allow this mamzer to be a dayan on the Beis Din, if he ends up becoming a Talmud Chacham. And then he writes, the only problem is he's Asur Lava B'Kal. Okay, so that's one aspect of his life, which, if you talk to somebody who's unable to get married for whatever reason, it's not just one aspect of life, but the Chavos Yair says, it's one piece of life. You can be the dayan in the Beis Din HaGadol. You can be the leader of the community. The problem is you're a mamzer, okay, so you can't get married. But outside of that, you have so much to look forward to. V'leisha B'Sanhedrin, he says, Ukvar Shaninu L'inin Levdoso, he says the halacha is that when we have a toss-up, let's say we only have enough money to save one person, but there are two people who are taken captive. So who should we give the money for? So you have to make an assessment. Who's going to do better? Now, how do we make a judgment call of who's worthy of being saved and who's not? That's a very difficult decision to be made. However, he says, the Shulchan Aruch tells us that there is a hierarchy. There is a determination of who's going to be saved and who won't. My father always likes to tell the story that he once went to a chasna in Toronto, or a Talmud, many, many years ago, and he said he had never met the parents of this Talmud. He came for the wedding because the Talmud learned in a shir for a few years. So he said he came, and they had told him that when he comes from the airport, he should come to the home of the family, and they would give him lunch before the wedding, whatever it was. So he came to the house, and whoever was in the kitchen was taking care, and my father said that the mother was getting ready upstairs, and then she called down, and she said, oh, is that Rabbi Schechter? Is he here? Yes. Oh, let me come downstairs. So she came down into the kitchen, and she says to my father, are you the one who taught my son that if I would be drowning, and you would be drowning, that he's supposed to save you and let me die? Was that you? So he says, well, the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch does say, it's an uncomfortable thing to say, but the Shulchan Aruch does say, let's say I have a parent who's drowning, or my Rebbe who's drowning, who should I save? Now, the natural instinct would be, I should save my parent. Says the Gemara, you should save the Rebbe. Why should you save the Rebbe? Why is the Rebbe better than your parent? The answer is because the parent is mevi'o l'chayo olam haba. I'm sorry, the parent brings you into olam hazeh. The Rebbe does even better. The parent just puts you into the world. Now, it's up to you. The Rebbe is the one who brings you into olam haba, so that's even better. Don't you want somebody's... Of course, if we had the choice, we would save both. But here we have a toss-up. You would save the parent... you would save the Rebbe over the parent. So this mother turns to my father and says, you're the one who taught my son that. So my father said, guilty as charged. However, I also taught your son, what he didn't say was that the poskim say, if a parent pays tuition for the child to go learn by the Rebbe, it's not that the Rebbe is just giving shiurim and everyone's showing up. It's you're paying for the service. Then it's as if the parent has a chelek in everything that the Rebbe's teaching. Now, the parent has to go to work and they don't have the ability to teach their children because they have to do other things. So they entrust their child with a yeshiva, with a Rebbe who's going to be able to teach them what they themselves should have done. If that's the case, says the say the poskim, then the assumption is then the parent is on equal footing with the Rebbe. Because who's bringing you to Olam Haba? It's not just the Rebbe in a vacuum. It's the parent who's facilitating the Rebbe's ability to bring you to Olam Haba because they're paying the tuition. If you didn't pay tuition, you wouldn't be allowed into the school. So therefore, he said, nowadays in our generation where parents pay tuition for their kids to go learn by the Rebbe, the halacha would change. Halacha would be that the parent is the one who was supposed to save and not the Rebbe. Anyway, that's the way he worked it out. But here he gets into that issue and he says, let's say the Gemara says a whole bunch of different cases, scenarios. What would we say if you have this person versus that person who should be saved, who shouldn't be? So here the Gemara says, what if I have a mamzer talmud chacham? I have somebody who's unfortunately a mamzer. But he spent his whole life learning Torah and becoming a Talmud Chacham. Now he's drowning in the ocean. He's drowning in the river. At the same time, I also have the Kohen Gadol is drowning. Now the Kohen Gadol runs the whole Beis HaMikdash. So what do I do? Who should I save? The Mamzer Talmud Chacham or the Kohen Gadol? Who's better? Who's better? What? Kohen Gadol's a regular.
Real one.
A real Kohen Gadol. He's a regular person, but he's doing his job faithfully. He's running the Beis HaMikdash. He's not good. He's not bad. He's Parav. Says the Gemara, Mamzer Talmud Chacham comes first. Mamzer Talmud Chacham comes first. Therefore, says the Chavos Yair, why are you telling me that we should now do a abortion for a child who is expected to be a mamzer? You know what he could grow up to be? He can grow up to be better than the Kohen Gadol. And if they were both drowning in the ocean, we would only save him, and we would let the Kohen Gadol die. So what do you mean? Why should he do a hapala? Why should you do an abortion on this child and take away his opportunity to go through life? Aye, then he adds, you know, at every bris, whenever we do a bris, we give a bracha to the child. What do we say? Whatever it is, right? So the Maharil, who's the father of Chachmei Ashkenaz, the Maharil writes that when you have a bris of a mamzer, happens every so often, a mamzer is also supposed to have a bris, right? Can't get married, but he's supposed to do all the mitzvahs like everyone else. So when you have a bris of a mamzer, the Maharil says, we don't say the tefillah of Kayem Esayelad Azeh. What, we want more kids like this in the world? We don't. So what are we going to daven, offer a special tefillah, should have a long life, and Arichas Yamim, and this wonderful mamzer should grow up to be what? So the Maharil says, we don't say that tefillah by the bris of the child. Says the Chavos Yair, maybe that means we don't want such a kid in the world. So the Chavos Yair says, no, of course we're not excited about it, and that's why by a bris we're not going to get up and make a whole declaration, the kid should live a long life. We're not so happy about the situation. However, he says, at the end of the day, once the kid is in the world, why should we take away the opportunity for him to be successful? Anyway, it's a very interesting discussion that the Chavos Yair has as to whether or not we should assume that you're allowed to do an abortion for such a child. But what you see from that is that it was something that was a very, very serious consideration. What you see is that this was even a possibility to think about, that maybe we should do an abortion, not because there's anything wrong, other than the fact that he happens to be a mamzer. Now, there were other Achronim who disagreed. The Ben Ish Chai is a tshuva on the Sefer Rav Poalim, where he was also asked a similar question, and he says, I'm not going to get involved, this is too serious of a question, I don't know how to answer, but I'm going to present to you both opinions. See, and then he says, go ask your own rabbi. You're not in my shul, so you go ask someone else. So he presents the answer, and he says, you know, the Chavos Yair famously writes, you're not allowed to do an abortion. Then he quotes from the Shelas Yaivitz that he says, you are allowed to do it in this case, because this is enough of a tzorich gadol, this is enough of a serious problem in front of us, and we don't want to ruin someone's life, so go ahead with the abortion. He says, I'm not giving an opinion, you go do whatever your rabbi tells you to do. You're asking me for my opinion, I don't have an opinion. I'm just going to tell you what everybody else says. So this is a very, very interesting addition to everything we've been talking about. Now, what I spoke about before was, do we have a right to actually hide the fact that somebody is a mamzer? What is that all about? So the Gemara says in Kiddushin, you have to think about it this way. If I'm going to be a Masada Kiddushin, what is my responsibility? Or I'm a parent. What is my responsibility in terms of looking into the yichus of a family? Now, we're not talking about looking into the yichus of whether they use these tablecloths on Shabbos or the other ones. Talking about serious shaila of yuchsin. How much do I need to look into it, and how much do I say? Kol Yisrael b'cheskas ksherim. I don't know. Before I give somebody an aliyah, I have to start asking, who is your grandmother and who is your great-grandmother? We don't assume that people have problems in the yichus. We assume most people that we're friendly with, most people that we interact with in our community are probably ksherim. So what is my responsibility as a Masada Kedushin or as a parent who's making a shidduch? How much do I need to start looking into these kinds of issues before I go ahead and allow my child to marry such a person? So this is actually a discussion in the Gemara Maseches Kedushin, Daf Ayin Vav. Says the Gemara, Hanose Isha Kohenes, Tzarech Livdok Achareah Arba Imahos. You have to go back four generations and make sure that they are ksherim. Says the Gemara, if you marry a Levi of Yisraelis, you have to go back five generations. We assume that a Kohen are much more careful about their kahuna, their yichus. Most of the rest of the Jewish people are not so careful. And therefore the Gemara says, if you're looking into a shidduch, you better go back five generations. I challenge you. You have some married children? You look back five generations before you marry them off? No. But that's what the Mishnah says. You got to go back five generations. And then the Mishnah says that the Chachamim disagree. The Chachamim and the Mishnah say, no, kol mishpachas b'cheskas k'sheiros einomdim. Don't have to assume that everyone's a problem and start digging up the information from five generations ago, that's unreasonable. We have a right to assume based on a chazaka, if your family has been acting Jewish for the longest time, and everybody's assuming that they're Jewish for the longest time, we have no reason to assume otherwise. And we have a right to say that kol Yisrael b'cheskas k'sherim heim omdim, unless there is an irur. Unless an irur means somebody raises a concern for a specific reason. Not just people are mumbling, but somebody raises a real concern. Now, the Gemara says in Ksubas Daf Chavav, very clearly the Gemara tells us, Divrei hakol ein iru pachos mishnayim. Says the Gemara, an iru doesn't mean we have a bunch of yentas standing around and saying something. Iru means we have two people who come and tell us a story that they know firsthand and who really share information that is relevant for us to know about the origin of this family or the origin of this child. The Rambam, when he discusses this halacha, says, Sheya idu shnayim shenis ariv bahem mamzer. You need two people who are going to serve as witnesses, who are going to come into the Beis Din, and they're going to say, we want you to know this is what happened, and we have firsthand knowledge of it. Not, we heard maybe something. That's not called an ira. Ira means we have two people that actually come and say something. That Rambam is paskin the halacha in the very beginning of Ebn Ezer in Shulchan Aruch. He paskins like the Rambam that the only way to passel a person is if we have actual testimony, which is really where the foundation of the heter this week came from. In the end of the day, we don't have a raya brura. We don't have two edim, two witnesses that came in and said, this is what happened. We're working on assumptions. We're saying this happened, maybe that happened, maybe the rabbi was frum when he did the Siddur Kiddushin, maybe he wasn't frum. So we don't know. We have a lot of things, but we're not sure. So the foundation of the heter really started on the fact, it was predicated on the fact that there was no edus, that there was no testimony. And that's what the Rambam says, based on the Gemara, that whenever you want to passel a person, you have to actually have testimony. Now, this is going to sound like a strange question. Does that mean if I don't have testimony, then I'm just allowed to go ahead with it, even if I'm quite certain that there's an issue? And what about if somebody knows, but there's not two edim that know? It's going to be very hard for two edim to know. How are two edim going to know that this woman did something that she shouldn't have done? Now, perhaps it turns out, perhaps it could be that now with DNA testing, this is going to become a little bit more complicated. Is DNA testing today considered like two edim? DNA testing doesn't lie. So the same way, if you have two edim that are going to come in and give us a story, if you have DNA testing that shows that the origin of this child, look, we know when the kid was born, we have a birth certificate. We know how long this woman's been married. She's still married. How is the DNA from someone else? It couldn't have been from before she got married. She was married 10 years, and then all of a sudden this kid was born. DNA is not going to lie to us. So that's a major question. How do we deal with that? Once we're going to start with DNA, do we say every Jew needs to be tested for DNA now, and let's see the origins of every single person? We're going to lead ourselves into a big problem. So that is a major, major discussion. Says the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin, Daf Ayin Aleph, a very surprising chiddush. The Gemara says, quoting a pasuk in Navi, what does it mean, Magishe Mincha B'Tzedakah? What does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something that was considered to be a tzedakah, that was considered to be a favor to the Jewish people? What is that? Now, I could have come up with many different things, but the Gemara says in this particular context, it's talking about the following, Tzedakah Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did us a great favor. What is that favor? Mishpacha Shenitma Nitma. If you have a family that has some mamzeris issue along the way, and somehow they get mixed into the Jewish people and nobody knows about it, nobody realized, so the halacha is, they're good. No reason to start digging it up and uncovering and finding out, even if we knew there was a problem along the way. But now that they're integrated and now that the problem somehow went away, we don't have to start going into it. Now, that's very interesting. Contrast that with the halacha by Basar B'Chalav. If I know that somebody's eating Basar B'Chalav, I don't just say, whatever, as long as they're not aware of it, as long as people don't know, just let it be. No, I should make them aware of the fact that this is not a kosher establishment, they shouldn't eat there. So here, this is a very unusual halacha that we find. That's an anomaly by Mamzerus. We find this only by Mamzerus, that even though it's an Isha D'Oraisa for a Mamzer to marry a Jewish woman, but still the Gemara says, Mishpacha Shenitma Nitma, once the family gets integrated into the community and the story is forgotten about, so then we don't have to discover it, we don't have to uncover it, we could just leave things as it is. And the Gemara learns as well that a Suffolk Mamzer, let's say I have a Mamzer Vadai and a Mamzer Suffolk. If I have a Mamzer Suffolk, it's not Usser. Normally I say Suffolk Daraisa Lechumra. Normally I would say if I'm not sure about a specific situation, I have to be Machmir if we're talking about a Nisa Daraisa. Here where we're talking about a Mamzer, the Gemara says, learning from Sukkim, the Gemara darshans that a Suffolk Mamzer is Mutter. Says the Rama in Simon Beis and Ebn Ezer. If we have a family where the people don't know about this issue, if you happen to be a person who knows, you're not allowed to share the information. You're not two witnesses. You're not allowed to go spreading the information. Now, says the Rama, if you know that there's a family that would be very, very upset that this was going on and that a shidduch was being made with such a family, then, says the Rama, if there's such ksherim, then maybe you should share it. But otherwise, says the Rama, why would you share it? The Gemara tells us, Mishpacha Shenitma, even if I know Bivados, even if I know with certainty that this person is a Mamzer, as long as the community doesn't know, as long as people don't know, and even if they're going ahead with the Shidduch, leave it. And that's what my father said, based on that Gemara, based on the Rama, maybe don't say anything. Don't tell the Chassan, don't tell the Kala, just say, everything's fine. Don't worry, you know, everything we thought was a problem really wasn't a problem, and don't worry about it. This is a case of a mamzer she'eni yodua. He's on the fence right now. He doesn't know whether he is or he's not. Now, we know that he is, but he doesn't know that he is. Maybe just don't say anything. Now, that would be a good etzah if we were living, as I said, 50 years ago. But today, the question is that really helping this person? Are you really helping this person when, potentially, in 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line, that information is going to be discovered? And then, it's a lot more difficult. It's a lot more difficult. Rav Moshe writes in a tshuva something very interesting. He often, as he often does, Rav Moshe, when he talks about one issue, brings a parallel from a totally different area of halacha to try to explain the issue that we're dealing with here, or to bring a proof or a raya from something else. So here, Rav Moshe writes the following. He says, how could it be that when you have a mamzer she'eni yodua, they're allowed to get married? What do you mean? We have there's something treif here, so you're not allowed to marry. How can it be? So he says, Rav Moshe says, the same way on Shabbos we find that the only time doing a malacha is a problem is when it's malachas machshebes, is when I'm having intent to do what I'm doing wrong. But if somebody doesn't even realize what they're doing, that's not a malachas machshebes, it's not an issur d'oraisa. So too over here, Rav Moshe says, that's the parallel to marrying a mamzer. What does one have to do with the other? Nothing at all. But Rav Moshe just uses that as a parallel, that the same way, two people on Shabbos can be doing the exact same thing, but one of them has intent to be doing it, one of them does not. That means one of them is going to violate an issur d'oraisa, and one of them is not, even though the action that they're both doing is going to bring about the same result. But still, one is malachas machshebes, and that's asur on Shabbos. One is not malachas machshebes, because I had no intent to do it, and therefore it's not asur on Shabbos. Says Rav Moshe, that's the same over here. If I am aware of the fact that somebody is a mamzer, I'm not allowed to marry them. Why? Because the pasuk says that a mamzer lo yava b'kal Hashem. But if I'm not aware of it, says Rav Moshe, that's the same as somebody who does a malacha on Shabbos without being aware of it. And that's called a lack of malachas machshebes. It wouldn't be an isser. Even though we're talking about a daraisa, so to over here he says, we're talking about an isser daraisa of lo yava b'kal Hashem, and that would be the same. Fascinating. Fascinating parallel that he makes. And he says that would be something that we should, think about. Now, obviously the Shulchan Aruch says if you have Yira Shamayim, if you're a person who's a God-fearing Jew and who wants to be careful and wants to have a family that's made of miyuchasim, there's something to that, right? The Gemara says that when a child is getting married, yivdok ba'achel, you should look into the family and find out, what are they like? What's going on there? So the Shulchan Aruch does say that every responsible family who wants to have a kosher lineage and never have these questions should, of course, look into the story. Not, you don't have to go exaggerate. You should find out, ask some basic probing questions and find out what's going on, which is what any responsible Masada Kedushin always does before they agree to do a Seder Kedushin. They'll always sit down with a Chassan and Kala, ask very basic questions about their parents' origins. Was your mother or father ever married before? Was there a get? Who married them off? If there was a get, I'd like to see it. You're not asking them to challenge them. You just want to make sure that this is something you should be involved with. The case that we were dealing with here, and I'm not going to share this detail. The case we were dealing with here, Baruch Hashem got married. And again, there's a lot more to talk about what the basis of the heter was. It wasn't only based on what we just said. This was one small piece of it, of what it was all about. It was a lot. It's a multiple page tshuva to describe how the heter came about. But for now, this was a very important piece of how it all came to be, that because we assume, Kol Yisrael b'cheskas k'sherim heim omdim, and even if somebody is not a kasher, but the assumption is that mishpacha shenitma nidma, so there's a lot of room to wiggle with that, and then you have to move forward and figure out, okay, but lemaisa, now that we know the information, and the boy knows what really happened, and he's the one who presented us the information, and we spoke to his mother, so now the whole family's aware, and the girl's family was aware of what was happening, so now what? So now what do we do? Now that everybody knows, how do we get to the heter? That's where, I don't know, anybody wants to continue this next week? You can? Okay. So maybe